Welcome to the program for Friday, January 11th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown today, with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. And today it's kind of an OPM reunion. On the Federal News Countdown, it is former OPM director and also former controller at the Office of Management and Budget, Linda Springer. And we were just having actually that conversation before we went on the air. And I did get it right, the comptroller versus controller conversation, Linda.
You did, absolutely.
And, of course, then it's one of those things where, wait a minute, I'm going to say it. I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to mess it up. And then I say the wrong. But I got it right, thanks to your expert guidance. It's great to see you. Thank you for coming in today. John Salamone of FMP Consulting is here. And he's the former Chief Human Capital Officer, Chief Human Capital Officers Council Administrator, and you worked for Linda, obviously, at OPM. So you guys are here as a team almost today. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Francis. It's great to be back, and it's outstanding to be here with Linda, too.
And congratulations to you on your recent appointment. Your promotion at FMP,
Thank you very much. That is a big deal.
Yep. And we congratulate you on that. And I'm very glad that you're both here. You've each chosen three terrific stories for the countdown, and we start with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story of the week, as selected by John Salamone, is from the Washington Post. And the headline is, Obama nominates Chuck Hagel for defense, John Brennan for CIA. And this is really, this and the John Kerry appointment are the beginning of what we're going to see, I imagine, over the next couple of months.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I wanted to focus really on the Senator Hagel portion of the story, because really it's intriguing to me both from a policy standpoint and a political standpoint. I mean, normally when you see a former or current sitting United States senator nominated for an appointment like this, their confirmation is virtually guaranteed. And, you know, if I was a betting man, I would say that Senator Hagel is going to be confirmed, but he's going to face some tough questions from a policy standpoint about Pentagon spending cuts and the nuclear program in Iran and what we're going to be doing about that. And then from Afghanistan, the troop drawdown. But from a political standpoint, what is really intriguing to me is just the posturing that's taking place on the Hill. And with, you know, I went back and read the statements from Senator Levin, who's chair of the Armed Services Committee, and then the ranking member, Senator McCain, and they were really coming at it from different angles. And really it was Senator McCain that was, you know, saying, I have serious concerns about the positions that Senator Hagel's taken, which is really interesting for a Republican to say something about that, you know, from a former Republican or from a former Republican senator. And also, I mean, one other thing I wanted to talk about from a political standpoint, because I think this story may have some implications in the administration sequestration strategy. I think what the president could potentially do is say that, of course, I can work across party lines. I have two Republicans that I've appointed in my administration. And as a matter of fact, we have to make all of these tough budget decisions at the Pentagon. And I put a Republican in charge of that. And if the president wanted to go and make that argument to the American people, that's a pretty strong argument to say, I am serious about making budget cuts. We have to cut $500 billion over 10 years. And I've got Senator Hagel, a Republican, in charge of doing that.
You're exactly right on what we generally see in the collegiality of the Senate. Senator Kerry has been nominated to become Secretary of State. And I can't recall anybody from either party saying anything but we would be happy to confirm him. So he's essentially locked in. We haven't seen a date yet, I don't think, for the confirmation hearing, but I imagine it won't be long, and it won't be a long process thereafter for him to get confirmed. So what you're saying about Senator Hagel makes sense. The interesting angle here is I think it was an article in Politico this morning, that part of the reason that Senator Hagel might be running into the problems that he's running into is he just wasn't very popular when he was in the Senate on a personal level. But that seems like an odd way. This seems like an odd forum in which you would take out something like that. But I guess when you're in the confirmation process, who knows what could happen?
All's fair in the confirmation process, so.
Yeah, and it's the process, I think, is the what will be interesting in all of these highly visible positions. What information will the process be used to try to shine a light on or extract things that maybe haven't been as visible up till now? In the case of the CIA appointment, or will it turn into a discussion on Benghazi, for example? And so I think the process and what the, I won't call it a quid pro quo, but what the kind of horse trading that oftentimes is behind the scenes. There was someone, I forget the exact figure, but it was along the lines of someone being called a $10 million man because there was some budget entry that was associated with a particular nominee. And so the process is cumbersome enough, and these positions are too important to be held back too long. And there's too much at stake. So you would hope that whatever is going to be done gets done relatively quickly, and you move on with it and get people in these positions, because there's really just a lot at stake.
We hear all the time about how onerous the process is. You've been through it. Mm-hmm. What is that like? Is it as bad as people make it out to be?
It can be, but it doesn't have to be. I think on the less visible positions, the bigger risk is that it sort of gets relegated to the back of the line, and things can get in the way. In my case, there were elections that were intervening, changes in majority, other more important issues. In the case of the more visible appointees, I think there's no question that it becomes more about that individual and particular issues.
John Salamone's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post about the nomination of Chuck Hagel and John Brennan for President Obama's national security leadership team. Linda, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times, the headline, 2014 budget likely to be delayed. And I don't know if you know this or not, but my colleague Jason Miller chases passback guidance every single year. This is like, I don't even think he does fantasy football. He's in the fall, he's concentrating on trying to track down passback guidance. So this is something he's been looking at for a long time. And this is potentially a big problem when you look at the rest of the calendar that Congress has to consider in the February-March timeline now.
Well, it is. And if Jason is chasing it, he's still running long beyond when he should be or normally is.
He's going to be in great shape.
And even though I was on the M side of OMB, I had the opportunity to sit in on a lot of the budget review meetings. And the passback obviously would have occurred long before now, usually in the November timeframe. The agencies submit their budget usually in the around Labor Day, September. There's passback in November. There's, you know, the kind of that horse trading back and forth, narrow it down to a few things. But at this point, you're looking at the real fine-tuning, getting it to the printer, being ready to deliver it in the beginning of February. And it's usually timed around that State of the Union. So the particular issues or initiatives that are highlighted in the State of the Union by the president then are followed on right away in the budget book that's delivered.
Well, then might it mean something that we're just learning today that the State of the Union address this year is going to be February 12th? I mean, that's just breaking this afternoon.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know. I there are probably other reasons. But this is the kind of thing, though, that I guess maybe you could understand why it might happen with all the sequestration discussions, you know, election ramifications, you know, so much uncertainty. So it's really hard to fault the players that are involved here in OMB, and it's certainly understandable. But it doesn't change the reality of the fact that there are programs, there are initiatives that need funding or need some line of sight into the future. And, you know, you can almost see certain things coming to a halt until this is resolved.
Now, when, as I said, the timeline is particularly daunting because Congress now will be getting this at about the same time that they're trying to figure out what to do about sequestration, because that deadline now is the beginning of March. Continuing resolution runs out March 27th. So we're and the debt limit issue is going to be in there somewhere. So we're starting to see a confluence of events here that bode for potentially a train wreck, I mean, for lack of a better
term. Yeah, there's a lot. And from the CFO standpoint, in the spring, they're starting to think about their 2015 budget.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 13, 14, and 15, and sequestration and everything else, a lot of trains coming together at one intersection.
Yeah, there's a domino effect here that is not going to be pretty if it all falls the way that it looks like it's going to right now. Linda Springer's third most important federal news story of the week this week from the Federal Times, headline, 2014 budget likely to be delayed. All of the stories in the countdown are linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Salamone and Linda Springer choosing their three most important federal news stories of the week. And we get the second most important stories on the list next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi. Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Ben Shaw, Industrial Security Officer with MTN Government Services. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients across the country. For more information on the firm, visit us on the web at OFPlaw.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Are you someone who crosses the room in just a couple steps? Or are you someone who's pushing the limit to get across the street before the light turns? How you move, how you walk, can often be very telling from a health standpoint. Now researchers have found that
people that were walking slower had a faster cognitive decline.
Dr. Rudolfo Savica is a Mayo Clinic neurologist who studied more than 1,000 people, looking at their length of stride, step cadence, and velocity. While the team's findings may not have an immediate impact,
this can be an early sign of cognitive decline. It can be very helpful to detect these people early, because as soon as we have available drugs that are somehow able to stop the progression of the disease, we may would like to intervene immediately.
For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Bender Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics ticket office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We'll have the latest updates on sequestration planning at the Pentagon, including where the biggest cuts are most likely to fall. Plus, the RAND Corporation has advice on how federal agencies can avoid crisis and escalation in cyberspace. Online mutual assured destruction just won't cut it. Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by John Salamone and Linda Springer. And we are up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Linda Springers from the Federal Times. The headline is agencies list 376 reports as unnecessary. And I think if we really think back on this, the person who probably deserves credit for getting this ball rolling is Bob Gates. He said back in, I think it was 2010 or early 2011, there are some things, that some reports that Congress makes us do that are a waste of time, nobody reads them, and we're just not going to do them anymore. And I don't know that anybody at any other agency had the courage to say that to Congress before, or maybe could have gotten away with it the way that Bob Gates could get away with it.
Yeah, and that could be, and you know, it's... I can tell you that everyone thinks it,
yes.
and they may do some things quietly, but maybe not, you know, as publicly. But I love this story because when you look at the list, and I'd encourage anyone who's listening to go to the Federal News Radio website and click on that list and just look at it. And I picked out a few samples here,
okay,
of what the reasons are. And most of these are to eliminate. Sometimes it's put it up on a website or consolidate it. And some of them are, you know, kind of obvious, like, you know, it duplicates another report or the funds for the program have that it's supposed to report on haven't even been appropriated. Then you get to some other ones like the report is obsolete because the program hasn't had any activity for the past 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Or here's one that I like. This report has been recurring for more than 30 years. The agency doesn't have any record of an inquiry or expression of interest in this report from Congress or any of the committees.
Which one is that?
It was one of the Veterans Affairs ones on medical and surgical bed closures.
Oh, boy.
You know, there are all kinds of things here about, you know, the program was never funded and never existed. So, but then, you know, in the course of the almost 400 that are here, I mean, I read through almost every single one has a great reason.
Mm-hmm.
And one time, John will remember this, I don't think it was a legislatively mandated, but there were a few reports that we had been doing, I think, quarterly. And we said, let's just not do it. Let's have the data so if someone requests it, we can do it. We can be responsible. Let's just not do it and see if anybody asks or if anyone misses it. And there wasn't a peep.
Nobody did.
And I would bet you on most of these, if you just had stopped them, and I think you had Senator Warner on yesterday, and
yeah.
It probably requires some legislative action to make this happen. And I hope they follow through on that. But if they just stop doing these, I bet you, in most cases, you wouldn't even hear.
Senator Warner had a more difficult time answering the question that I think is the most important, which is what are he and his colleagues going to do, John,
yeah.
to make sure that this train doesn't start up again? Because you can eliminate these,
yep.
but if they start adding on a whole batch more of new reports, we're going to come back here in 10 years and have the same problem.
Yeah, and I actually heard the interview last night when I was driving home, and you know, as a former congressional staffer and an oversight staffer, I was on the receiving end of a number of reports. But then working with Linda, I was responsible for submitting the annual report that the Chief Human Capital Officers Council had to submit, and that was a legislative mandate. I think the real question, there are two questions for me. One is, are the committees of jurisdiction going to agree that some of these reports are obsolete and not necessary? And two, when they need to make some hard decisions, they need to decide what is the outcome? What are we trying to get out of this report? Are we using the report to influence or to shape the future direction of this program? And if you can't answer yes to either one of those questions, you know, it's not necessary, so no, it's not necessary, and we're not really using the report for anything, then eliminate it and get rid of it, because it is a burden for the agencies, especially in a program that's not funded. What do? You put two pieces of paper together and submit a blank, you know, a blank report. We didn't.
This
do
program does not exist. And then hand that in.
Yeah. So, but it is a burden to fill out some of these things, and I think it's one of those issues that Congress has to take a hard look at these and say, yes, we don't need these any longer.
Well, I wonder if this will be an area too where technology may take over, and the delivery of big data and the ability to harness it through websites like performance.gov may make the need for these reports go away. Because, like you said with your example, Linda, the data is available. Well, if the data is available on performance.gov, and somebody wants to put a query in, they can put a query in and get the information out that they want without human beings actually having to sit down and compile it in a particular way for presentation.
I think there's someone here that's the justification, candidly, mm-hmm. that you can get to the data in some other way, and that's there's going to be more and more of that.
The other issue that I took up with Senator Warner, in addition to the how do we keep the tree from growing back problem, is the idea of the necessity for legislation, and I think the jurisdiction issue is the other problem, is hopefully members and their staffs won't see this as their little fiefdom, and this is the little piece of the federal government that I have control over, and so I'm going to do everything I can to hold on to that control. I mean, is that a possibility?
I think that is a distinct and real possibility. I you know, committees of jurisdiction don't want to give up any authority, and they don't want to lose the ability to receive information from the agencies. But Francis, you bring up a great point that if there's data available on performance.gov, why can't they get to it that way? The other side of it is that some of these reports, I think some of the reports that agencies submit are a good way and a good resource and a good tool for the administration to position themselves for what they would like to accomplish from a programmatic standpoint.
Well, I will say I wouldn't necessarily call this the most important, but I think it's the happiest story for a lot of people at agencies that are responsible for doing these things. The good news that I think came out of Senator Warner's conversation with me yesterday was he did say that he thinks that this is the beginning of this effort and not the end, so that this 376 number he would like to see grow to a lot more was what I took away from that conversation.
Well, I hope everybody's disciplined enough to follow through on it.
Linda Springer's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Agencies List 376 Reports as Unnecessary. And as Linda mentioned, you can find the list linked up now on federalnewsradio.com. John Salamone's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is next on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's the Federal News Countdown.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
There's a sea change going on now, and you're seeing the slow death of the desktop. Microsoft, they defined their future in terms of mobile. You know, Windows 8 came out, it supports all the touch screen. They've got the Windows Surface portable device. Google has a portable device. Of course, everybody's trying to play catch up with Apple. And so now we are moving into an accelerated phase of the post-PC.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The Washington region is made up of powerful people and powerful places. And now there's PowerJobs.com, a career site made just for Washington's top talent. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com specializes in jobs in Washington's most influential industries. Defense, energy, finance, government, healthcare, technology, and more. From companies like SAIC and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Have a go bag, have a plan. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Any kind of disaster can impact your health. One approach can help you be ready for any and every type of storm. A go bag of items and a plan for action can make you ready for when a disaster hits. Include extra glasses, contact lenses, clothes, bottled water, and first aid supplies. In HHS's Office of the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, Ed Gabriel suggests some other things you may need.
Make sure you have copies of your credit card numbers. Those are important. Maybe a little extra cash, because if there's a power outage, we all know ATM machines aren't going to work and cash will be essentially king.
Also, set up a place where you and your family can connect or reconnect, and have a number where everyone can call and leave a message, somewhere outside of the immediate area that will not be affected by the event. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected today by Linda Springer of Ernst & Young and John Salamone of FMP Consulting. And, John, your second most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's story, my colleague's story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined MSPBI's Gaps in Employee Motivation. And I have to confess, when I first saw this report, when we got the release from MSPB, I thought, all right, what's different about the Employee Viewpoint Survey, the Best Places to Work? Well, that's a collation or a kind of an understanding of the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. But what's different about this? And yet, when I had a chance to read it and then talk to the folks from MSPB about it, it's dramatically different because it's looking at different things about what federal employees are doing and how they view their jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one point I'll make when we get a little bit more into the discussion, because I think there is some definite connections to the history of some of the results from the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey reinforcing that. But, you know, I've been on the show several times over the last couple years talking about, you know, managing in times of austerity, and really this jumped out at me because we're talking about motivating employees. And if you look at the MSPB report, they found just globally that, you know, 70% of federal employees feel highly motivated by their work. But what differentiates this from other surveys is that then they talk about specific motivational aspects of the job. And when you drill into those specific motivational aspects, it turns out that federal employees don't really feel that motivated by things like the variety of opportunities that they have at work, the significance of the work that they do and the impact that their jobs have on others, and the autonomy and the feedback that they receive. So internally, you know, those issues, I think there are opportunities for agencies to make some improvements. But where there is some correlation, I think, and where there is some connection is really in the second part of the MSPB study and getting at the better use of rewards and recognition, both monetary and non-monetary. The surveys found that 23% of respondents indicated strong connections between their performance, recognition, and promotion. That is almost identical to what we find in the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. And in particular, that the item where it's pay raises depend on how well employees perform in their jobs was a 21% positive rating, which is pretty abysmal, to be quite honest with you. And so you've got 23% and 21% from the MSPB and Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. So there is some connection. There is some crossover. MSPB makes some recommendations. I think they're good recommendations, but I think they could have come up with some recommendations that were a little bit more contemporary. When I was reading some of the recommendations, one, they talked about job enlargement, and that the really what they meant by is expanding employees' responsibilities within their job to increase their knowledge and skills. Well, guess what? Everybody feels like they're getting dumped on. So it's not the job enlargement. It's just I just have more things to do right now, mm-hmm. and I'm not getting paid for it. So I understand what MSPB was going for, but I think that there are other opportunities. And the one big piece that they point out is we have to do a better job of connecting what the employee does to the mission of the agency and seeing that line of sight. And quite honestly, that's the performance management process, and that is the role for the performance management process and where agencies should be focusing to make those improvements.
Linda, on the motivation piece that John was talking about, my takeaway was based on because I saw the numbers the same way that he did, kind of interpreted them the same way, but my takeaway was employees seem to like the idea of working for the federal government and seem to like the idea of working even for their particular agency. But when it comes down to the day-to-day tasks that they perform, that's where things start to separate a little bit. Does that make sense? Do you think I'm getting the right feel of it?
I do think that's a factor. I think it ties to what John just said as well about their sense of supporting the mission and being identified with it. I think they feel identified with the mission by virtue of being an employee of that agency. So if they're working at NASA, they feel very vested and identified with what NASA does. But when it comes to their own particular activities, Monday through Friday, they might feel that that doesn't necessarily seem as connected as it should be. Now, admittedly, some things are going to be by their nature, but it's the job of leaders to make sure that people recognize that their contribution is valued and is critical. And if they didn't do those things, all these other things wouldn't happen. So I think that's the distinction.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the leadership piece, if you look at the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, it doesn't talk about motivation per se by an individual, but it talks about I am motivated by my leader. And those numbers are about hover about 40%. But to your question to Linda, when you look at the Fed Viewpoint Surveys, 90% of federal employees, you know, feel motivated by their work. I think what we need to do right now is look for unique opportunities, especially in a tight budget environment when we're not going to be hiring employees. We may be, we may have furloughs, but I think a lot of things can happen. But we need to focus on how are we going to develop our employees. Do we have career maps that we can show them that I'm a GS5 HR specialist? I want to be a GS15 HR specialist. How do we motivate and migrate through that process so I can learn, advance, and contribute? Look at what the VA is doing with the My Career at VA. They've got a great program over there, and I think it's that is a unique opportunity that agencies should look at and say this is a good way to motivate our employees by showing them a map of what they can do. And how they can develop and move.
Now, Linda, you mentioned leadership, and that's an issue that I've tackled any number of times on this program. We've talked about that mm-hmm. before. And it's the main holdup seems to be the concept that agencies seem to either like to promote or find it's easiest to promote people who are most technically proficient at their jobs. And that turns out to be a double killer because you remove your most effective technical person and you also put somebody in leadership who might not have the experience to do it or might not even really want to be a leader, but might see that as the only way, as John was talking about, moving up the career ladder to be able to do that.
Right. And that act is an issue, and it manifests itself in, you know, motivation scores that maybe aren't as high as they could be. But the one good thing you hope is that by shining a light on it with these kinds of reports that people will digest it and think about it and maybe, you know, modify a little bit what they're doing there.
I mentioned my takeaway from the MSPB report, John. What was your main takeaway?
That we have a lot of work to do, you know, really in motivating employees. And most definitely, I think we have to focus on performance management. And if we can tighten up the performance management process and really take a hard look at what works and what doesn't work, and that means OMB and OPM working with Congress and GAO and getting the unions in the room and talking about how we can improve that process so employees see that link between pay and performance and that they feel like they're contributing to the mission of their agency. I mean, that really was the takeaway that I had from that.
And by using the term pay for performance, you lay out a term that we could spend the entire rest of the show, not just this part of the show, talking about, but we have to leave it there. John Salamone's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Jack Moore's story headlined MSPB Eyes Gaps in Employee Motivation. We're at the top of the chart now. Linda Springer and John Salamone's most important federal news story of the week. When In-Depth with Francis Rose continues, you're listening to the Federal News Countdown.
Washington region is made up of powerful people and powerful places. And now there's PowerJobs.com, a career site made just for Washington's top talent. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC 7. PowerJobs.com specializes in jobs in Washington's most influential industries. Defense, energy, finance, government, healthcare, technology, and more. From companies like SAIC and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
From tight budgets to technology challenges, 2013 will be a time of continued uncertainty and great opportunity for government leaders and contractors. In our special report, Top 3 for 2013, Federal News Radio goes directly to the source, asking over 20 of the federal community's biggest thinkers what they believe will be the issues affecting agencies and industry in the new year. Hear what they have to say and read their Top 3 for 2013. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search 2013.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
John Kaminsky is a senior fellow and associate partner at the IBM Center.
The law requires updates to all agency existing strategic plans, all existing annual performance plans, and all existing priority goals. These are to be reported to the Congress in February of 2014, but OMB has deadlines to the agencies of having drafts due to OMB by June.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. It's every Friday at this time in the 3 o'clock hour. And today, the selectors are both veterans of the Office of Personnel Management, Linda Springer, former director of OPM, administrator at OPM, and now with Ernst & Young, and John Salamone, the former director of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, and he is now with FMP Consulting, the recently promoted John Salamone. And we are up to, on the countdown this week,
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Salamone, is my colleague Jason Miller's story from federalnewsradio.com. Commerce's CFO and CIO collaboration paying off across the board. And to be fair, Commerce is not the only place where the CIO and the CFO have a good working relationship and a good collaborative effort, but it certainly is a template for maybe what we hope to see in government in the coming years because of what we're dealing with budget-wise.
Yeah, most definitely. And let me just make a quick comment about Jason Miller, because you were talking earlier about him being the chasing down the pass back. So I think we've got a new nickname for him, Jason Miller, Federal News Radio's pass back halfback.
So, that's pretty clever. That's much better than what we call him around here off the air.
Well, that when we go off the air, we want to hear what you call them.
There you go.
You're absolutely right, Francis. And really why I chose this story is because it is a good news story. And I commend Jason for bringing some light to this because, you know, look, we're talking about sequestration. We're talking about all the acrimony on the Hill and the can't make decisions. This is an agency that's identified over $200 million in administrative costs over the last 2 years. And those are real savings. The one thing that I would like to see moving forward is a story where you have all of the C-suite functions working together to identify even more savings. I mean, really, if we're going to identify cost savings, let's put the responsibility for the program managers and the executives that are in charge of these programs. Congress has a role, but let's let the agencies be creative. $200 million, you know, I'm not very well versed in IT and financial management and the operational aspects of it, but as a former congressional staffer and oversight staffer, when I read an article like this, my eyebrows go up in a good way. And what I think would be great is if we saw an article, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, we'll use this is a particular example. What if they brought the chief human capital officer in on this process and they linked their computer purchasing to the Chico's workforce planning process? Well, we're only going to hire 800 people we might not hire anybody. Linking how many computers we buy to how many people that we're going to hire. And so you don't overspend or underspend one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see a lot of push from the CIO community. They want to have these kinds of relationships. And it's fascinating to me because it's happening at the same time that there is an explosion of interest in information technology across government. So it seems like this is a terrific opportunity mm-hmm. for this kind of thing to happen, Linda.
Yeah, I think it is. I think this is a good model, and I think we'll see a lot more of it. And it goes back a little bit to what we talked about earlier about data driving things, and data that CFOs use, data that, you know, the CIOs use and actually can take hold of and manage. So I think there's a lot, there are many points of nexus on this, and there's value for everybody in it.
The idea of the chief information officer not being the gadget person anymore, not being the BlackBerry guy, as one CIO put it, is something that they have wanted for a long time. Roger Baker is the example that we hear all the time at VA. He has budget autonomy, and he has the ability to direct money where it needs to go, not just in the technology shop, but across the entire government or across the entire agency. What do you think either of you needs to happen within the agencies? Is it structural or is it cultural to either get that autonomy for the CIO or that could develop this kind of collaborative relationship among positions, either structurally by saying it's official, you have to do it this way, or culturally just by building relationships and maybe it's just a matter of earning trust?
Well, one, I think people make things work. So regardless of how the boxes are wired, it will work if the people – you have the right people and they're committed to it and the right leadership. So I think that's more important than how the boxes are wired.
So if you say that, then it sounds to me like that any agency could do it this way if they decided that's how they really wanted to do it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think what GIPRA modernization did was create the chief COOs of the agencies, chief operating officers of the agencies, to help facilitate these kinds of discussions and break down the stovepipes. And, you know, sometimes it's putting ego aside. Sometimes it's just one C-suite executive not really understanding what the other executive is doing. And really, those are the opportunities I think that we have to get to. And creating these collaborative approaches, I think, from commerce's standpoint, demonstrates that it can be done, demonstrates that savings can be done. We're talking about the CIO and CFO. Let's open it up to all executives, the C-suite functions, driven by the COO, and let's see what we can do in terms of doubling or tripling the types of savings.
And it's terrific to talk about the savings on things that the agency's already doing or in the process of doing, but it also strikes me that this is the kind of relationship now that exists as we're planning fiscal 2014 mm-hmm. and as we're planning fiscal 2015. And so the CIO is going to have some influence that maybe he or she wouldn't have had without a collaborative relationship like that moving forward too, so that it's not necessarily going to show up as savings, but it will be money better spent, it would seem to
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make
That's
sense?
Right. Yeah, it does.
All right. It's John Salamone's most important federal news story of the week is Jason Miller's story headline, Commerce's CFO and CIO collaboration paying off across the board. It's linked up along with all of our stories on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. One more to hit on the Federal News Countdown this week. Linda Springer's number one most important federal news story of the week next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis from the wildly popular and always topical Foodie and the Beast.
Next Sunday, January 13th, we are kicking it off with coffee. Joel Finkelstein is in. He is the owner and head roaster at Quala Coffee. We're going to talk wine with Mira Winery out of California. And Joe Nathan is back. We're talking sips and sups.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 on 1500 AM.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
New federal employees have a lot to digest when they come on board, including how their retirement system works. It's called the Thrift Savings Plan, made up of 10 different investment fund options. Feds are now automatically enrolled in the program when they're hired, with 3% of their pay invested in the TSP's G Fund, the program's safest option. Employees also receive matching contributions from their agencies on the first 5% of pay they invest. Next week, a look at the various investment options.
As a new federal employee, do you realize that you can automatically enroll for up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis with WEPA, a nonprofit association that has been serving the federal community since 1943? No medical exam is required. To be eligible, you must be within 365 days of your original federal hire date. Also, do you know that WEPA's premium rates are significantly less than the federal program? Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Military members receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time. Also receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention the branch of the military for which you serve, or visit Sprint.com/DOD. Retired military and veterans are eligible for Sprint's military discount and offers under the branch in which they served.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week featuring the 3 most important federal news stories of the week is selected by John Salamone and Linda Springer. And Linda, your number one story is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Obama Cabinet Shuffle Taking Shape. And we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the program, but this is a great way to bookend because this story mentions the resignation of Hilda Solis as the Labor Secretary. It does touch on Senators Kerry and Hagel and the potential at the time the story broke. And now we know the actual nomination of Jack Lew at Treasury. And so we're starting to see a picture of the second term of the Obama administration. Now, you were part of the first and second term of the Bush administration. And I wonder what you can talk about, not ideologically, but about the texture of a first term versus a second term, and whether you're seeing the same kinds of texture changes first to second Obama as you saw first to second Bush from the inside.
Well, yeah, and the reason why I picked this one is, as you say, it's more about that transition, not about the people or their ideology, but more about how do you not lose momentum, how do you keep engagement or reestablish engagement, and let's assume that these people, whoever are going to be the new people, are in place pretty quickly. And by and large, it looks like there are a lot of changes here. And it's not just at the cabinet level. You've got Social Security. That's a term appointment for that administration. That's about to end. Mm-hmm. You've got OPM director, potentially. And the deputy spot there has been vacant. You have an acting OMB director. So there, and then there are a whole group under that that, you know, of deputies, undersecretaries. So there's a lot of leadership that could potentially have new incumbents. So what will make that a healthy transition? And we've been writing about that and working with NAPA, for example, on advice to leaders, and some of those papers are on their website, and Path to Making a Difference book that just came out. But one is this is a White House role, managing the expectation of the people coming in. You know, there's an agenda that's already set. So you might come in and you're excited. I'm going to make my mark. I'm going to achieve some sort of policy initiative. But guess what? That's largely been established. Your job is to help come in, maybe some refinements, but it's to carry it out. So So the people coming in, I think, need to understand what their role is. It's not to upset the apple cart, but it's to continue on the agenda that's been set largely. Secondly, connecting with people, conversations to have right away. And there were three of them I had identified. One was talk to your CFO, understand the issues, the financial issues. How is your organization financed? What are the programs that are key? What's the budget process? Talk to your IG. What are some of these issues that are boiling so that you can get out in front of them and make sure your organization is being effective? Talk to your field office employees. You know, be connected with your people. And you've got to do that fast in a second term because the clock's ticking. So all of those things that relate to good leadership, transition, I don't think cards are left, but knowing what your role is when you come into one of these positions.
The part of this conversation this week, John, that I thought was interesting, and I didn't have a chance to go back and research, so maybe you can help refresh my memory. But the White House pointed out that General Holder will be staying at Justice and that Secretaries Sebelius and Shinseki will stay at HHS and VA respectively. I don't remember the White House ever, not just in the Bush administration, but I don't remember in for Clinton too, where they said, these are the folks that are going to stay. I think they just stayed and continued to do their jobs. Am I remembering wrong, or is this a little different than normal?
No, I don't think you're remembering wrong, and I found that interesting as well. Obviously, they had conversations with those individuals, and they wouldn't make public statements if they weren't going to stay. I don't think it's unusual because if you look at the Attorney General, you look at HHS with implementation of the Affordable Care Act and with the premium that the administration is placing on taking care of our nation's veterans, I'm not surprised that those three individuals are staying. But, I mean, to Linda's point, I'm going to reflect on our conversations when I was coming to OPM and you were the director and sitting down with you about the Chief Human Capital Officers Council and, you know, understanding what you wanted to do with the council. And then I knew what my role was, and then just going out and talking to all the Chicos about what they wanted to do with the council and how we could use that, the council as a forum to discuss tough issues that we needed to address.
Yeah, and I think some of it depends on who becomes the incumbent. Are they people who've already been in the first term and maybe had some vantage point or some relationship, or are they coming totally from the outside? And those are all key.
I guess the key phrase to remember, if I were to sum up your three points into one, is remember that you serve at the pleasure of the president, right?
That's right.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Linda Springer. It's the federalnewsradio.com story, Obama Cabinet Shuffle Taking Shape. Thank you, friends, for being here in the countdown this week. It's great to see both of you. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The Federal News Countdown back on next Friday between 3 and 4, and hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.